And now let's go over here to Ann, who's been patiently waiting. Claire, over there in Nebraska. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I was curious about stem cell therapy. I had just seen something on the cancer video that says there's still cancer stem cells within your blood. So I was wondering, like with ALS, if you get a stem cell transplant, you're getting both good and bad, I'm guessing, or has there been any help for ALS patients with stem cells?
I don't know about any research on stem cells in ALS patients. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, ma'am, that it doesn't exist. It's just that in all the looking we do for medical research, we haven't found any of that yet. But look, if anybody out there has got any clues for research papers on does or does not stem cell therapy work for ALS, please send them to us. But there I have to plead ignorance. What I don't have to plead ignorance about, ma'am, have you heard of the professor from one of the universities in Florida who's got a book out called either the Deanna Protocol or the Deanna Treatment for ALS? I forget which. But if you put into your search engine on your computer, if you use one, if you put in ALS and Deanna Protocol or Deanna Treatment, again, I forget which, that book is out there, ma'am, and apparently it does help some people. And it's an all-natural protocol. That's the even nicer thing.
Yes. We are currently taking that. It does help definitely some. It's still progressing, though.
Well, here's another thing, ma'am. There was a research article on the use of lithium and ALS that came out of Europe. All right. Well, then some American research scientists said that they did the same thing and it didn't work. But if you read very carefully through what the American folks did, they did not do the same thing as the Europeans did. And one of the things they used would block the action of lithium. How do you like that? Maybe they didn't know it. So you might want to look into that again, because now others have written about how those two researches were not the same and how the first one worked. And I personally wrote a while back about the second one and why it didn't work, which is this other molecule they had in there that shouldn't have been in there. And you might take a look at that, ma'am, because in the European work, it actually helped quite a little bit. And that's just good old low-dose lithium.
So would that be like 5 to 20, or
yes,
what would be considered a dose of lithium?
Well, 5 to 20 is the range that for nearly everybody is safe. We don't get into anywhere close to lithium toxicity until we get to about 40 or 50, and in those cases, it can do a couple of things. They're not neither of them fatal, but one of them is interfere with parathyroid function, and the other one is mess up kidney function a little, so we don't want to go there, do we? But at 5 to 20, doesn't do that, and I always would talk to your doctor about doing that and seeing if there's any need to check you anyway to see if there's any problems. But in all the years I've been working with people with lithium, I've not run into them with the 5 to 20 dose. Now, how does lithium work? Even that is at least partially known. What lithium does is it protects the membranes of the brain cells specifically. It protects those membranes against toxins. It's a big deal, protector against toxins. With experimental animals, it doesn't matter what toxin that animal's given. But if they have two groups of animals, and this group over here has lithium in their animal chow, and that group over there doesn't, and then they give all of them intravenous toxins of various sorts, the animals who have the lithium in their animal chow mostly survive, and the animals in the group that doesn't have any lithium in their animal chow, they kind of drop dead.
Wow. In Diane's protocol book, she did heavy metal detoxification, and she said that it didn't help her at all. That seems surprising to me.
Well, it's quite possible she didn't have any. Let me take that back. I haven't read her entire book. And by the way, everybody who's listening, her name is Deanna, D-E-A-N-N-A. She may not have had a high burden of toxic metals, but for those who have a high burden of toxic metals, which is only findable with what's called a chelation trial. You can't just do a simple hair test and look for toxic metals. That doesn't find near as many as a chelation trial. In somebody who does have a very high burden, I would be trying it anyway, just simply because getting rid of those toxic metals is bound to be good for us one way or another.
Okay. So if you're doing the heavy, the chelation, then how often do you replace the minerals or take a week off, or what kind of schedule do you put people on?
Yes, ma'am, that does vary because some people, when we check them initially, we find their digestion and absorption of nutrients is perfectly fine. They just happen to have ALS. With other people, though, and it is more likely with a lot of the neurologic diseases, we found that, oh my goodness, look at that. Their basic levels of minerals are pretty low, and their amino acids aren't so good, and they're not digesting well. So anyway, it varies. If a person is in good nutritional shape, then we'll do chelation maybe 3, 4 times, and then replace the mineral, do the replacement mineral IVs in between. But if the person is not in such good nutritional shape, good grief, sometimes we start with the nutritional IVs, ma'am, to build them up, and then we'll do it like between every 2 or 3. So that's an individual case thing.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome, ma'am, and thank you for calling.